Should I build a portfolio solely around dividend cash flow?
Only if you want to pay lots of unnecessary taxes every year. Welcome to Fleece Fests, where we talk about misunderstanding investment strategies and taxes. I'm Dan, and no, you should not build a portfolio solely for the purpose of generating dividends.
All right. So I feel like all of investing social media is one of three things these days, right? Employee retention tax credit. Side note, that's gotten suspiciously silent. So we should probably go talk to somebody about that. But second, selling unnecessary life insurance. We've talked about that too. And as this episode talks about, dividend investing. I feel like that is just constantly in my Twitter feed. So Dan, why don't you explain briefly what dividend investing is?
Dividend investing is the selection of individual stocks based on their company's dividend payment yield and history, or selecting investment products that hold a portfolio of companies that generate dividends.
Okay, so buying profitable companies, what's the problem here?
The irony of dividend investing is that it strikes all the right chords. You're buying companies that are profitable, yay, and their board of directors are electing to pay the shareholders from those profits.
That seems good. I'm not sure where we're getting irony here, but innocent enough to me. I'm not really following the problem.
Well, that's where the irony comes in. Remember, as a shareholder, you technically own a piece of the company. If you own or operate a small business right now, you would want it to be profitable. Maybe not profitable on paper for tax purposes, but profitable in the sense that its revenues exceeded its expenses. A critical element of that is because you're probably reliant on the profits of the company to pay your own bills. Now, in turn, if you're invested in a friend or a family member's business, you'd probably want the same thing. The problem here is that there is a world of difference between a securitized share of common stock in a publicly traded company and a closely held private business and what you should want from those things.
Okay, but I'm still not hearing a good reason to not to want to own a profitable company.
Well, let me speak your language, Jess. Tax ramifications.
Oh, God. Dan, I just got done with the end of extensions. Please. I just because I speak taxes doesn't mean I actually want to speak taxes.
Too bad, Jess. Too bad. The issue isn't that we don't want you to own profitable companies. Far from it. The issue is that dividends create unnecessary taxation of an otherwise profitable asset. Many closely held small businesses are ultimately going to be taxed on their profits, and those profits will then flow through directly to the owners of the firm in the form of a pass-through entity or a partnership. So if the company is profitable, the taxes are essentially unavoidable without having other deductions or write-offs or credits to offset the profits. But if the company is a C corporation, as all publicly traded companies must be, then there's an opportunity to simply retain the earnings. In other words, pay taxes on the profits by the company itself, but then avoid the double taxation to you as a shareholder when dividends are being paid out.
Okay, so just pushing out profits more frequently, which means more taxes, but still, I'm not sure I understand because taxes are going to get paid either way, whether it's more frequently or less.
Well, sure. At the company level, taxes are going to happen, or at least they should happen, sans running an unprofitable year or some really clever tax accounting. Regardless, the issue therein then is not whether the company should create taxable events for its owners or not. You see, let's say the value of a share of a company, public or private, is $100. If the company chooses to issue a dividend of $1 per share, then as of the moment the dividend is issued, the company's share price is now only worth $99, and the $1 dividend is now taxable income, either at ordinary income or capital gains rates, depending on a variety of factors. So before the dividend happened, you had $100, but now you have less than $100 because of the taxability of the dividend.
I gotcha. So in other words, taxes are destroying some of your wealth when you can receive a dividend.
Correct. And don't get me wrong, if you're successfully investing in anything, taxes will come up at the time that you're either ready to get out of that thing or going along the way through interest and dividend payments. But whether it's a small business paying a limited group of shareholders or partners, or the more common example of people buying dividend paying stocks, Uncle Sam is going to ask for his share of that payment.
Well, I mean, though, you do have retirement accounts here. That's not going to be an issue with those.
Well, true. In an IRA, Roth IRA, or any company retirement plan that's tax advantaged, none of the potential tax losses matter. There are still some minor costs incurred, including the necessity to reinvest the dividend payments and the potential transactional or regulatory fee costs of doing so. These aren't likely to be as big as the cost of taxes if the dividends were taxed, but they're not nothing, right? You're incurring a cost that you wouldn't have incurred sans the dividend being paid.
Okay, well, fair enough. But at the risk of being annoying here, because it's taxes, my thing, you've already briefly mentioned it, really, but some dividends are taxed at pretty low rates. I'm thinking here about qualified dividends.
You're right. Some dividends are taxed at long-term capital gains rates, which range from 0% or 23.8%, depending on your level of annual income and ordinary income tax bracket margins, or marginal rates, rather. But for those who Dividend Guy didn't explain what these are, qualified dividends are those paid out from U.S. companies and some foreign companies, but have met some time-holding requirements. So essentially, you can either pay high taxes on money now from recent profits of the company or receive dividend income and pay lower taxes in the future.
Cool. Well, I mean, regardless, aren't we just making a mountain out of a molehill here? Do our listeners really need to avoid investing in dividend stocks just because there might be some taxes? I mean, if you're walking down the street and somebody says, hey, here's $1,000, but I need to take 40% off the top for the government, what are you going to do? Say no?
No. And most importantly, it's actually quite difficult to avoid dividend payments in a portfolio. As a shareholder of a stock or an investment product, you have no say over whether the company is going to be profitable and whether or not the board of directors are going to choose to issue a dividend. Dividends are often seen as signs of a healthy company. And while a stock buyback instead might actually help pump up the value of the shares of the company and increase the value in a different way, those purchases get into their own complicated tax realm and also can be seen as signs that the company thinks its shares are undervalued.
So you can't do anything about it, and it's actually a sign that the company's doing well. Dan, forgive me, but why are we talking about this?
As with many things we discussed, Jess, the underlying investment or asset isn't the problem, it's the ecosystem around it.
Ah, we're talking about influencers and grifters, aren't we?
Exactly.
Woo-hoo. All right, so now we're definitely on the same page. Let's go.
There are dozens, if not hundreds, of Twitter accounts, YouTube videos, and TikTok influencers talking about dividends nonstop, 24/7. They will share their dividend portfolios. They'll ask people where they're buying their next dividend-producing asset. They'll share their monthly or weekly dividend income. And essentially, they're just trying to gin up a public obsession with dividend investing.
This sounds awfully familiar, like maybe a pump and dump scheme, boiler room, I don't know.
That can be an outcome or the secret agenda of doing it. I wouldn't go so far as to say that these are all scams, but an online influencer who builds up a community around the idea of investing in the same type of assets is almost inevitably going to lead to the temptation for groups of people to collaborate in buying the same stocks or the same assets, which can inadvertently become a form of pump and dump or boiler room scam.
Yeah, I mean, but this is the same as communities that pop up around crypto or day trading or anything else, really, right?
Certainly. But I think there's an oddly, how do I put this? It's almost less sinister nature to this. With things like IUL sales, where the people doing it are just trying to make commissions by tricking people into buying complex insurance products, or crypto, where people are trying to get other people to buy monopoly money with real money, dividend investing itself is a legitimate investment strategy.
All right, Dan, you're really throwing me through a loop here. I can't tell which way you're coming. You're hot, you're cold, you're yes, you're no.
Look, Katy Perry wrote that song about me, you know. Look, dividend-specific investment products exist. There are whole research studies built around the value of dividend investing and analyzing the performance of companies that issue dividends versus those that don't. One of the best-selling and most popular investing books of all time, The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham, is essentially a manifesto for value in dividend investing.
I never read it. I should probably hand in my trading card. I know you're definitely not bringing up all these good things for the sake of defending dividend investing, right? You're not that nice.
No, I'm not. To be perfectly frank, and frankly kind of mean about it, most of the people who go around being influencers and building online interest in dividend investing who cite these studies or quote the book are just kind of dumb. They're falling into a trap of confirmation bias. They're reading a study that says dividend-producing companies outperform the broad market and immediately ascribing the reason as being dividends themselves. Yet the more nuanced reason for a study like that to come up with that result is to look at the first and second order effects.
Okay, so the companies aren't profitable because they're issuing dividends. They're issuing dividends because they're profitable. And in turn, a broader survey of the marketplace is going to be full of companies that are struggling or losing money and thus not paying dividends. My head hurts.
Exactly. It's simply survivorship bias, but you'll get dozens, if not hundreds, of people frothing at the mouth if you suggest that dividends aren't somehow responsible for a company's actual profitability or performance as an investment asset, particularly when you take into account that many dividend investors will go out of their way to buy companies after they've issued a particularly significant dividend.
Oh, interesting. Because then they're just chasing performance or buying dividends, really. Isn't buying dividends, or rather selling dividends, illegal for investment advisors?
It sure is. And of course, the loophole here is that influencers aren't professional investment advisors, so they can do whatever they want. But a financial advisor, a registered rep with a stockbroker license or an investment advisor, can't sell a stock to a customer on the premise that the company has announced it will issue a dividend. And this sort of gets back into the pump and dump or boiler room issue. If a company issues a big dividend, it's not unlikely that a dividend influencer will go out and buy a chunk of stock at that company and then excitedly share about the big dividend with a less timely or in-tune audience that follows their lead. And this is the same reason that it's not typically permitted for investment analysts who publish stock price research to have a direct financial interest in the stocks they research, lest they publish research solely to pump a stock that they own or hurt a stock that they've shorted.
Yeah, cool. Well, Dan, what's the best advice you can give for people who are still interested in dividend investing? Honestly, I mean, should they be avoiding it entirely? Should they be doing their own research to find their own dividend opportunities? What's the takeaway here?
You know, it's that dividend investing just really doesn't matter. There are plenty of dividend-related strategies that can make sense for investors. And in fact, in some countries, dividends are taxed more preferably than capital gains. And in those countries, dividend investing makes more sense than it does in the United States. But for the average investor, dividends in particular are just one of many features of any stock or investment product that they might buy. And it can be a good investment, it can be a bad investment, but the dividend-paying history isn't really meaningful to future outcomes, right? Historical performance is not a guarantee of future results. And there are places where it's more tax efficient to own dividend paying stocks and other places where it's going to drag on your rate of return. But pursuing dividends deliberately is about as rational as avoiding dividends deliberately.
Gotcha. Well, if you're obsessed with paying extra taxes, love hyperanalyzing your portfolio to death, and love chasing returns, maybe try dividend investing. Or if you paid attention at all, maybe not.
Fleece Vests is produced by Daniel Yerker and Jessica Gettle. Daniel Yerker is an investment advisor representative of My Wealth Planners, a registered investment advisor in Colorado, and Jessica Gettle is an investment advisor representative of Pavilion Financial Planning, a registered investment advisor in Pennsylvania. Our theme song is Dr. Yes by Yari. Nothing discussed in this podcast is investment advice or any other form of advice, and the podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. If you make investments or other financial decisions because of the podcast, frankly, you weren't listening.